Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today to discuss One Stop Systems' second quarter ended June 30th, 2018 results. With us today are the company's President and Chief Executive Officer, Steve Cooper, and its Chief Financial Officer, John Morrison. Following the remarks, we will open the call to your questions. Before we conclude today's call, I'll provide some important cautions regarding the forward-looking statements made by management during the call. I would also like to remind everyone that today's call will be recorded and will be made available for telephone replay via instructions in today's press release in the Investors section of the company's website. Now, I'd like to turn the call over to OSS President and CEO, Steve Cooper. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Carrie, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us on today's call. Today, I'd like to discuss our financial and operational performance, our plan to acquire Concept Development Incorporated, and our increased quarterly guidance. These are really exciting times for One Stop. After a basically flat first half, we're now on the cusp of a breakout growth and success in our marketplace. It's quite a step function where our quarterly revenues are expected to more than double over the next two quarters. Really remarkable growth. The breakout growth is due to five factors that we've previewed in our other earnings call and said in the second half it's going to be great. Well, now we're there, and it's really happening. So first, our OEM media and entertainment customer has increased their forecast for Q3 and Q4, up to record levels, and that's fantastic. Secondly, our military flash array program is ramping up. Third, we recently won two new design-ins, one for a new media and entertainment system, and a second one for a new flash array using the new Ion 5.0 software. Fourth, our products and design capabilities are really resonating with the marketplace. In fact, we've submitted more proposals with values in excess of $1 million than at any time during our company's history. Typically, we have one to two of those proposals outstanding. We currently have more than 10 outstanding. So a lot of customers beating the path through their door, so to speak. And last, but certainly not least, our M&A has just about concluded a new acquisition with Concept Development Incorporation. That, of course, is the big news of the announcement, and let me talk a little bit more detail about that. So first, we're now in the final phases of the acquisition agreement for Concept Development, known as CDI, and we expect to close the deal by the end of August. CDI designs and manufactures specialized high-performance computing products for the avionics and in-flight entertainment markets. You can learn more about CDI from their website at cdvinc.com, cdvinc.com. The strategic benefits of the acquisition include we get access to the in-flight entertainment market space and its and customers. They have tremendous technical expertise in the design and manufacturing of airborne equipment. They already have significant OEM design-ins and have a number of new opportunities that we believe together we can win in the next few years. And fourth, it enhances OSS's technical capabilities in whole. In fact, we've already been talking to some of our customers who are very excited that CDI's capabilities combined with One Stop's capabilities can really further what they would like to do with their products. Some of the highlights of the financial elements of the deal include consideration of roughly $4.9 million worth of stock and about $1 million of cash. As a result of the acquisition, we'll add $4 to $6 million in projected annual revenue. And CDI is also currently profitable and running about 38 to 42% gross margin, which is higher than One Stop typically runs, so this deal will help increase our gross margins and profitability. Together, we have more capable resources for bringing high-performance computing to the IFE, which is in-flight entertainment marketplace, and others, while offering greater value proposition to our combined customer base. We plan to continue to operate as separate business units, but with a dynamic exchange of talent, expertise, and engineering know-how. We also expect to realize synergies and efficiencies with our combined sales, marketing, accounting, engineering, and human resources departments. Jim Reardon, the current CEO and president of CDI, will continue as president of the CDI business unit and also as a major shareholder of One Stop. complete the merger later in August. Before I go further into our outlook for the remainder of the year, I'd like to turn the call over to our CFO, John Morrison, who will take us through the financial results for the second quarter of 2018. John?
Thank you, Steve, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Earlier today, we issued a press release with the results of our second quarter ended June 30th, 2018. A copy of the release is available in the Investor Relations section of our website at onestopsystems.com. Following our IPO in February, we launched this new Investor Relations section in order to provide our stockholders and other interested parties with important company information. This includes SEC filings, stock information, corporate presentations, press releases, and corporate governance documents. We plan to continue to use this site for disclosing both material and non-material information about OSS, so we encourage you to visit the site often and sign up for email alerts. Now, for the second quarter of 2018. Our revenue in the second quarter of 18 was $5.9 million as compared to the year-ago record quarter of $7.5 million. The decrease was primarily due to lower sales to our significant OEM media and entertainment customer versus a year ago, as well as a delay in the shipment of flash storage arrays that we anticipated to ship in the second quarter of 2018, which was valued at approximately $1 million. Gross margin percentage decreased to 27.8% of revenue in the quarter as compared to 35.6% in the year-ago quarter. The decrease in gross margin was primarily due to increased applied labor and overhead of $278,000, which had been previously capitalized and was relieved from the inventory. This charge-off eroded the overall margin by 4.9 percentage points. The consolidation of SkyScale contributed negative gross margin of $148,000 or 2.8 percentage points of the margin decrease due to underutilization. Excluding the increase in the applied labor and overhead, the absolute core OSS operations contributed gross margin at a rate of 33.7% in the second quarter as compared to 35.6% in the year-ago period, which was mainly attributable to product mix, increased sales, and those being met, laid over a cost of revenue base, which was largely a component of fixed costs. Operating expenses increased by $335,000 to $2.8 million, or 47% of revenue, as compared to $2.4 million, or 32% of revenue, in second quarter of 2017. The change was primarily due to increased costs associated with the addition of the ION software development team and costs associated with being a public company. Net loss attributable to common stockholders on a GAAP basis was $1.5 million, or a loss of 12 cents per diluted share. This compares to net income attributable to common stockholders on a GAAP basis of $257,000, or 3 cents per diluted share in the second quarter of 2017. On a non-GAAP basis, net loss attributable to common stockholders was $724,000, or 6 cents per diluted share, as compared to net income attributable to common stockholders of $457,000, or 5 cents per diluted share in the second quarter of 2017. Adjusted EBITDA was negative $576,000 as compared to a positive $609,000 in the same year-ago quarter. As we discussed on our Q1 call, we believe our non-GAAP earnings per share and adjusted EBITDA metrics are helpful to assist in the evaluation of the company's financial performance. Please reference our definition and use of these non-GAAP terms and their reconciliation to GAAP in today's press release. As I also discussed on our previous earnings call, I would like to describe an unusual tax situation we have in terms of the customary relationship between income tax expense and pre-tax income. The net loss for the second quarter of 2018 included an income tax provision of approximately $556,000 as compared to $65,000 in the year-ago quarter. Customarily, when you have a pre-tax loss, you would expect to have a tax benefit. But similar to the first quarter, we recorded a tax provision in the second quarter despite having a pre-tax loss. In determining our current quarter income tax expense, GAAP requires us to forecast our annual effective income tax rate, or better known as AETR, for the year ending December 31, 2018. Based on management's projections, we expect income tax benefits related to research and development credits and equity compensation benefits to exceed our pre-tax earnings in 2018. As a result, we expect our AETR to be negative for the year ending December 31, 18, and when this negative AETR is applied to our current quarter's pre-tax loss, the result is a quarterly income tax expense. If we experience pre-tax earnings in future quarters, we expect to record an income tax benefit as a result of the negative AETR that we are forecasting for the year ending December 31, 2018. Now, turning to our balance sheet. Cash and cash equivalents total $9.3 million at June 30, 2018, as compared to $186,000 at December 31, 2017. The increase in cash was due to the proceeds from our IPO in February. All outstanding notes, the balance of our bank line of credit, and a significant portion of accounts payable were paid off from the proceeds, resulting in OSS operating debt-free. This wraps up our financial results for the quarter, and I'd like to turn the call back over to Steve.
Thanks, John. As I discussed earlier, we expect dramatic growth in the third and fourth quarter. Including CDI, but exclusive of any other M&A activity, we expect revenue of $10 million to $10.8 million in the third quarter, ramping up to $13 to $14.2 million in the fourth quarter. This represents revenue growth of 68 to 82% in the second half of 2018 versus the second half of 2017. It's really quite an amazing growth. For 2018, revenue for the full year is anticipated to between $36 and $38 million. We continue to pursue additional strategic acquisition and are optimistic that we'll announce an additional acquisition prior to year-end, which could increase the revenue outlook for the latter part of this year and into 2019. As we stated previously, quarter revenue may fluctuate plus or minus 15% from the company's plan in any given quarter due to variations in delivery, such as what we saw in Q2. The ramp-up of military flash array sales and the planned inclusion of CDI are anticipated to also increase gross margins in the third and fourth quarter. These two periods are also expected to be highly profitable so that for the full year 2018, a highly profitable Q3 and Q4 should bring us back to break-even neutral or slightly profitable for the year. We're also incredibly excited to move through this step change of growth. The pieces are all coming together. Customers are ramping up. We're winning new design wins, our products and design capabilities are resonating in the marketplace, and we're closing acquisitions. All in all, we believe the solid foundation we've laid for growth and the continued execution of our strategic vision will continue to strengthen shareholder value and position OSS as the leader in specialized high-performance computing. With that, I'd like to open the call to your questions. Operator?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key, followed by pressing the one key on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow the signal to reach our equipment. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal for questions. And we will take our first question from Scott Searle with Roth Capital.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Congrats on the acquisition. Hey, Steve, just to follow up quickly on CDI from a revenue standpoint, you know, it looks like it maps out then at $1.5 million per quarter. Is that the correct calculus there? And so you get about $500,000 in the third quarter and $1 million or so in the fourth quarter. And what kind of growth rate have they been experiencing? I know it's off a small base, but kind of early thoughts on how that looks into 2019.
So yes, roughly $1 million to $1.5 million per quarter. Not sure on the exact date of the close, but a few hundred thousand in the Q3 and about $1 million-ish in Q4. Secondly, they have actually experienced some real nice new design wins just this year. So they've got some pretty big customers that are just ramping up with new designs. I like design-ins that are long-term, and I even more like design wins that are fairly recent and have a long life to them, which is what we believe these have. Historically, the last couple of years, they've been roughly flat revenue. But as I said, a real flurry of design wins earlier this year has positioned them really well for future growth.
Gotcha. And maybe to follow up on military Raytheon with the storage arrays, it looks like you got a big quarter in the third quarter, and it steps up sequentially again into the December quarter. Is that going to be the new normal going forward? I think going back several months ago, you talked about maybe doing $5 or $6 million in 2018 in revenue with this customer. It seems like it's going to be bigger than that. So as we look into 2019, how should we think about sizing that customer? And maybe to throw a disguise in there as well, seasonally coming back very strong, will they be up for the year? And, you know, how much are you thinking about growth for disguise and the thoughts of that going into 2019 as well?
Yes, starting with the military program, the ramp up has been a little harder to predict than we had expected. We had expected to ship more than $1 million more in Q2 than we actually did. The good news is we did get the PO, the $3 million PO, which we announced, and unfortunately it was all scheduled to ship in Q3 this quarter versus Q2, contributing to the huge growth, but disappointing that it hurt our Q2. For Q4 and even into 2019, as we go through the early phases of this ramp-up growth, we still don't have very clear data in terms of how many units they want by month or even by quarter. They're still talking in yearly buckets. So the yearly buckets are of the size that we've talked about before, but the quarterly shipments are a little bit uncertain right now, and so there could be some fluctuations due to that going forward. The disguise, our media and entertainment customer, they have had a fairly soft first half. In fact, it's been a little bit down versus the previous year against their initial forecast of quite a bit of growth for this year. It just turns out they're very back-end loaded, and the sales have started to really ramp up just in the last couple of months. They've, in fact, increased their forecast every month for the last 4 months and are having us pull in what was previously forecasted in later periods of time. We're scrambling a bit for materials to be able to fulfill all their orders, and their buffer stock is dwindled down to where they're basically taking everything we can build and shipping it straight to their customers. So demand is very strong, and we're excited. We pretty well highly confident that'll continue throughout the this year. Perhaps there's some seasonality early in the year. We hadn't seen that in past years, so we don't know if that's seasonality or just they went through about a six-month soft spot in their demand. Can't really explain why. We're really pleased, though, that they're breaking out in a big way in Q3 and Q4.
And lastly, if I could just follow on the pipeline of deals, it sounds like record level of RFP activity of larger deals. Could you talk a little bit about the timing, when you might start to see that materialize in the P&L? And maybe as part of that, I know the military customer, there were some opportunities for some additional storage arrays. and possibly HPC solutions within that account. Maybe the update on that front. And then for John on the gross margin front, it sounds like does the amortization of capitalized costs go away in this quarter? Do we still have that to contend with? And then as part of that, there have been some higher component costs or concerns related to GPUs and memory, which you guys have seemed to have been managing pretty well. Can you just give us your quick thoughts on that as well? And I'll step off. Thank you.
No problem. First, on the pipeline of deals, most of the pipeline of deals are actually commercial deals. We've seen a real flurry in requests for specialized versions of our compute accelerators. We have two very major companies in the autonomous car sector that are looking to put considerably more artificial intelligence right in the car, and so we're bidding two of those programs. We're bidding several other commercial functions for compute accelerators, but we also have several other flash array customers and I believe two expansion chassis opportunities as well. So it's just our products seem to really be resonating right now, and the whole concept of specialized computing, almost every one of those opportunities has specialized elements in it. I think there's one of the 10 or 11 that we have out that is just a standard product, but the others all have some custom engineering involved, which are the kind of deals we really like, where we can co-design and get a much stronger lock-in. Usually we get a little bit higher margin for those kind of deals as well. So the pipeline is very strong. John?
Hi, Scott. So on the gross margin question, with the applied overhead, labor and overhead that was charged off to cost of sales, typically as products are built, those are a component of inventory until products are actually sold. In addition to that, we also do an evaluation on a quarterly basis to make sure that inventory reflects the lower of realizable value or cost. And so as a result, there was a charge to cost of sales of $278,000 in the current quarter, which eroded that margin by 4.9 percentage points. We continue to evaluate inventory on a quarterly basis, making sure that we look for obsolescence or slow-moving inventory, as well as any other additional capitalized costs that might be in inventory, and we evaluate that on an ongoing basis. With respect to cost of products, at this point in time, we have not noticed a significant increase in our cost of products. We are starting to get some rumblings in the marketplace about potential increases attributable to tariffs, but at this point in time, we have not realized any such significant increases as a result of shortages or as a result of concerns over tariffs. So we just haven't seen that yet, but we are aware of the concern and are continuing to monitor it. You want to add anything?
Great, thank you.
If I could just add, you asked about the amortization of intangible assets.
Oh.
And the big piece that we've been amortizing is back from the Magma merger we did 2 years ago. That amortization was over a three-year total period, and so we'll continue to have that large hit per quarter through July of 2019. That's one of the things we back out between GAAP and non-GAAP measures. And then going forward, each time we do an acquisition, they're highly likely to have a fairly large element that's classified as an intangible asset, sales list, trademarks, website names, that kind of thing. And the accountants these days like us to put a large amount of dollars into that bucket versus goodwill. When we do that, we have to amortize that over some period of time, typically 3, 4, 5 years. So although Magma will go away mid-2019, CDI will likely put at least that much P&L hit immediately going forward once we close that deal. And each acquisition going forward, unfortunately, it messes up the GAAP P&L pretty good. That's a non-cash event, but that is GAAP accounting as it is today.
Right.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good talking to you, Scott.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. We'll take our next question from Rudy Miller with the Miller Group.
Gentlemen, I thank Rob for taking 60% of my questions, so you only have to have 40% now. gentlemen, I'll just cut to the chase here. Disappointing. There's no sense in beating over the past. It's more about what you're doing today and tomorrow. But on some of the factual items and then some of the questions for the future on the strategic and tactical side, first of all, you talked a little bit about SkyScale contributing negative $148,000, and I believe Steve, you just commented that you're down to your chip and direct and bare bones. And one of my concerns, not just with the future of SkyScale, which was asked by Roth, but you're talking about having inventory deficiencies for those products, and that it makes me pause to ask the question on my list of how is your inventory with your quote projected guidance for Q3 and 4? You've never produced that historically in the company's history because you're at a new place naturally. Do you have the inventory, since you say you're having problems with inventory just with the smaller division, their subsidiary partnership there? Do you have enough inventory and people the next two quarters to actually produce what you've never produced before at these higher levels? That's one question. And I've got a number of other follow-ons.
Yeah, let me take that one to start. We believe we do. Anytime you venture into something you've never done before, there is an element of risk. But we believe we have the personnel, the facilities, the test equipment, all of the various elements to produce the product. The products that we anticipate, we do have the advantage that we have a very large backlog fairly early in the cycle, like now, so we know what to buy. It's not last-minute inventory. It's more build-to-order for the most part business, so we've had the orders for some time and have had plenty of lead time to get the products in. The other thing that helps us somewhat is that a big chunk of this quarter will be these flash arrays for the military, and those have a very high dollar value per unit, approximately $250,000 each. So it doesn't take. So we're not building lots of units. They're very expensive units, but they're not lots of them.
It's not a volume item. It's for you. It's a high end at $250,000 a pop item.
Exactly, and that'll be $3 million of the $10 million quarter, but that's only 12 to 13 units.
So it sounds like that you've been able to use your liquidity partially from the offering to and the orders being such an advanced stage that you were able to bring in the majority of the required inventory with time frames that and have the liquidity to acquire it so that when you came to producing it, since it's not like I'm producing 20,000 units or 10 or 5,000, you just define those $3 million worth over the coming area at $250,000 a unit. So you're telling me that at least on the perceived deal, you've done a lot of pre-financial and inventory work thus far to get to this point. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. In fact, because we for a long time believed we would ship some of these units in June, we were even further ahead of the game. The order just didn't come in time to ship them in June, but we had materials in the pipeline ordered and ready to go should our customer have pulled the trigger as we expected. So we're really good for Q3. We could get some upside surprises that we'll have to scramble to meet, but for what we're expecting, which are pretty big numbers, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Well, let me go forward on to my next list of questions. Let's go into, needless to say, as a shareholder in the stock, down almost 20%. It's not a happy time for shareholders and the probably how it was rolled out from a presentation point. But you know what? Today's the first day of the rest of your life, so it is what it is. We have averaged down a little bit along the way, but going forward on the acquisition proposed acquisition definitive agreement. My first question is, what is the company and the board's policy on announcing potential acquisitions. Now, some people do it with the LOI. A majority of sophisticated companies do it only when they sign a definitive agreement, because if you look at how many from LOI to definitive agreement, and we're talking about, it goes into the meat and potatoes of my follow-up questions is, what is going to be your future policy if you're 2 weeks a day or 30 days away? Because, you know what, I've been in deals where they don't work out. So the first thing I would ask you, if this doesn't close, then how much do we back out of the revenue and the future profits and et cetera? But so what is the policy on announcing done acquisitions? Now, August sounds great, but I've got deals that are supposed to close last December that still haven't closed, I'm involved in. So what is the policy on announcing an acquisition? Are you going to do it consistently the same way, or are you going to do it by LOI or by definitive agreement, or just whenever you think you need to announce it, which helps the stock and or whatever? I mean, what is the policy?
So our default policy, we reserve the right to have exceptions to it, but our default policy is to not announce the letter of intent or term sheet, but rather to announce only when we have a definitive agreement or so close to a definitive agreement that...
Okay, that's the fuzzy area, Steve. We'll cut through the other BS on the past. We understand the LOI. This fuzzy deal. I'm talking about the fuzzy wuzzy. You either have a definitive agreement policy or you don't. That's it. You just need to tell me what it is. But you're saying if it's somewhere fuzzy in between, and then you're announcing it. So what does that mean? Is that 2 months fuzzy, 2 weeks, or just whenever you want to say it? If that's your policy, great. Let us all know that in advance so that when we're sitting here looking at 2 or 3 weeks away and you don't have a definitive agreement signed yet. But that's okay. So you're telling me is you've got the fuzzy-wuzzy policy somewhere close to definitive agreement when you think it may be appropriate, but you have the right to walk away from it. Is that what you're saying? Is that the policy?
Yes, in general.
Okay.
In general, we'll wait till we have the definitive agreement signed.
Yeah, but I'm just saying there's no consistency. So why would you announce it then? If your policy in general is you wait till it's signed, so why would you announce it before you sign it? Then that's not a policy. That's inconsistent.
So we made the decision earlier today with the definitive agreement is not signed. I think we can talk about that. Because we believe it's within the next day or two, within 24 hours perhaps.
So you made the judgment call. Now we're talking maybe the next day or two. So what you're saying, you made a judgment call. So the policy is it's subject to change if you feel you need to announce it for whatever reason, even though it's not closed, not a definitive agreement. That's all I'm asking. Well, you know, whether I agree or disagree, not the issue. I just don't, I like to know at least what the policy is. Okay, I got it. I figured that. Thanks for articulating that. That's what I needed. So now I'll go into company itself, and I haven't had a chance to look at the website because I just got any information as I came in. But what's the number of employees and how long they've been in business?
They've been in business 35 to 40 years. I believe they have approximately 12 employees, plus or minus a few, depending on how you count contractors.
Okay. And they're generally the last 3 years. They've been cash flow positive the last 3 years?
Neutral, I believe. 2 years ago, they were plus. Last year, they were a little bit less, small negative, but basically neutral cash flow.
Okay. And what makes you think they're going to have this? And how can you help them? What's going to have after 35 years being maybe a $4 million business or five or projected potentially six? But it looks like since you said in your press release $4 million to $6 million in projected annual revenue, can you tell us what the roughly historical revenue has been in the last 24 months?
They've been running in the $3 to $4 million range.
Okay, so that's why you had $4 million kind of as a base. Okay.
They have been, I believe they've been as high as $10 million in any individual years over their history. So they've been larger, been smaller. They have a large technical content. And in fact, back in their early history, were strictly an engineering house and would do the engineering for these programs and then give as part of the deal, provide the design drawings back to whoever paid them so that they could have them manufactured themselves. The model of moving to a design and manufacturing company, more similar to what One Stop is for them fairly new, started occurring about 4 or 5 years ago. But over the last couple of years, they've evolved to pretty much 100% design and manufacturing model. And that that has a big impact on the amount of revenue you make. It lowers your margin, but increases your revenue dramatically. The other thing is that in the in-flight entertainment space, they have a fairly narrow number of customers, small number of customers, that are pretty large design-ins. And their largest one is well over $1 million. So for a small company to have $1 million company customers, that's really something. And they've won several new ones just this year that should ramp up. So it's a small enough number of customers that during the due diligence, we visited customers representing over 80% of their revenue. And through those conversations, we confirmed that they have a very good reputation, that the customers want to give CDI more projects and business, and they felt really optimistic that if they were part of One Stop, they would have more confidence in putting more business through CDI. So very positive due diligence and introduction of One Stop. So all of those factors come together to give us a high degree of optimism in terms of their growth next year.
Okay, well, I'm not there yet, but I'm glad you have it. So as an investor myself, I'll follow through on this. So one of the things that you kind of hit upon was one of my follow-up questions is, what's the percentage of concentration? I've seen a lot of small companies lose a concentrated deal, and if they're doing $4 million and one is doing $1 million, how many customers do they have, and what's the percentage of concentration on this roughly $4 million in revenue? One of them has got to be... already 25% is one of them because you told me it was $1 million. So what's the percent of concentration with there? I was going to say you're their three biggest clients. I mean, that's secondly, and I'm still trying to figure out, I know you're buying it and the technical reasons why you're saying it, but why, and the follow-up other than concentration is, why do you think they can grow future? And then I'll get into the pricing questions on the what you're paying and how you're paying for it. But let's go through the concentration first, and then once again reaffirm to me why you feel warm and fuzzy inside that you're going to actually grow this business, and why just clamping it onto your company other than having the accounting and HR and a bigger financial statement, why it's going to help them grow and what's impeded them from growing.
So I may not have caught all of the questions, but let me...
Well, the first part is concentration. We'll start with that. I'll keep it rule ABC. Concentration, how many clients, what percent of concentration is it?
So their top three accounts represent approximately 80% of the total revenue.
Okay, so you got a highly concentrated business you're buying, number one, correct?
Yes, highly concentrated business,
okay.
Yes.
Item little B here. How do you think you can grow this when they've been up to 10, down to 4, round 3 to 4, break even back and forth? What's the synergy that I'm missing or don't understand yet? Because that's why I'm asking the questions, is what's the synergy to make this grow to be a growing component other than give me the reasons. I know you've got more money than they have. How are they going to grow? How are you going to help them grow, and why is this a 1 plus 1 equals 3, because if it's not 3, 4, or 5, if 1 plus 1 equals 2, it's just bigger gross. And help me understand that. Educate me.
So the growth will come from new designs. Primarily, we believe, at the same customers. The in-flight entertainment business is – there are only a few primes that sell in-flight entertainment systems to the airlines. And the largest...
Well, being a former board member and CEO of airlines, public companies, and building a couple myself, and being also around the avionics industry, I do understand that part.
Yeah, so the largest one in the space is called Thales, British company, very large company. And
right.
Thales is CDI's number one customer. And they make the in-flight entertainment system for probably about 60% of the world's commercial aircraft, including most of the Airbus.
I got it.
Well, they don't
I got that.
So we think the growth will come in a higher level of penetration in existing customers rather than prospecting for new customers. There'll be some of that as well. What we've discovered is that CDI, we believe, is fundamentally sales force and proposal constrained. In other words, their CEO is their best proposal writer, but he only goes out to win new businesses when he's not overwhelmed running the small company, and they don't have much of a sales force to take that off and work the deals with him. So we believe that simply having a sales force as well as a marketing campaign, but mostly salespeople, as well as a stronger engineering component, will dramatically increase the opportunities. And he has a very high hit rate. Once he does a proposal for a deal, he has a very high hit rate of closing deals. So we're encouraged by that as well. So
you're hoping the sales force and the existing customers expanding, since it's a pretty small market in general, which what their component is. One of my concerns is just to meet gross revenue and optics is when you bolt on smaller businesses that don't really have either a large enough market or upside, and you're so concentrated, you lose one or two, that you have issues, and that's just a question. So I need to understand the philosophy and why you think you can make it for, diluting the stock and giving $1 million away, what you're getting for that in future and in cash flow. And so now I'll go in a little bit more of the pricing of the transaction according to the press release that was put out. And at least you're not tweeting like says some CEOs are. The 4.9 million stock, my first question is that $1 million in cash. So, you're roughly at the, $6 million level, and $1 million of that being cash. And key is, what is the price of the share range? Are you doing it with a 30, 60, or 90-day average of the bid and the ask, or on the bid, or what are the number in general? And I know you haven't closed yet. If you'd signed a definitive agreement, we would know that because it would be in it, subject to the formula of when you did your final close period. But so we're giving up $5 million in stock, and at what price, at what average, and $1 million in cash for a business doing $4 million roughly with concentrated people that you hope to expand with your sales force. So what's the basis of the value of the stock, and what is the registration rights on those stock, whether it's $4 million or $6 million or $2
million? So the pricing will be, it's the 15-day average, 15 days prior to closing.
I think that's pretty poor on your side and of the aisle, whoever's negotiating it, but that's my opinion as a shareholder. But okay, you said it's 15 days, the average when you closed of the stock price.
And average down closing price.
Right.
15 days prior to closing.
Right.
Well.
You've been down low as 390 too, and you've already got a 20% discount on your stock at times. But okay, and $1 million cash. Why do you think that's can you give me any color on why you think that value is equal to this company's, how'd you come up with the valuation? I mean, how can you support that valuation for this business? Well, what is your, whoever your deal team or your board, I mean, as a shareholder, how'd you come with the value you're paying that $5 million? Can you give go ahead.
So it's a combination of factors. Certainly, if you look at the valuation of other companies that are in the avionics or military avionics, having a typically for a deal like this, it would be a multiple of revenue, and they would typically be in the 1.5 to 2.5 times revenue. This one is depending on whether you think of them as a $4 or $6 million company. is somewhere in the 1 to 1.5.
Okay,
so,
where are you getting that? You talk about what size of companies are you talking about that are selling at 1.5 or 2 times revenue in this particular space? Do you have some comparables in this space other than larger companies for the smaller company? So you're just telling me that I'm just taking that you know this is normal. It's like guys tell me all the time, it's normal to pay a 2 times the revenue. Well, it depends on the industry and the size of the company, et cetera. So what's your analysis there? I mean, do you have companies you can tell me that you utilize that look at that approach? You know, you just threw out that 1.5 to 2 times. So you got to be an expert in it or somebody in your company to be able to use that if that's the basis you're using.
Yeah, we can talk probably offline. It would be better.
Okay, that's great. All right, that's fine. We'll move on to the next question. Thank you. So if this doesn't close, you'll have to put out a release that didn't close and redo your forecast because you're forecasting roughly 500,000 Q3 and $1 million in the question asked by Roth in Q4 with CDI's projected performance. Is that correct? So if the deal doesn't close, now we've announced all this, so the stock's going to go down a little bit, probably. Don't know. Maybe it'll go up. The deal doesn't close, so how much of the projections in Q3 and Q4 are attributed to CDI?
Yes.
Of your guidance?
Of the guidance, the Q3 is in the range of 200 to 500,000.
Right.
Was contributed to CDI because we're not certain on the close date.
Right.
And in Q4, it was $1 million.
Right. So I was correct at what you said to Roth. I was just reconfirming that. Okay. Well, like you said, I'm going to go with that. But the future is, as far as manpower, employee base, you feel, Steve, that you're comfortable for the next 2 quarters. You've got enough manpower because some of these units are highly priced, and it sounds like you've done a good job on inventory, cash, you and John, on managing, buying parts in advance. And, of course, I went back questions when you did the offering about what happens to your suppliers in China if things get tight, even before the tariff wars were being, talked about too much. And everybody's got to deal with that. But do you have any other alternative places that parts or things or options you can do? And what is your strategic plan for if you run into some of these difficulties that are not at it's an event that occur. It's a tsunami in business, and everyone's got to deal with it, whether they like it or not. But do you have a plan B or C if you're unable to obtain parts in China, for instance? What is your emergency evacuation, as we say, if we get an earthquake here in Southern California? Do you have your kit ready to go and your water and your flashlight and,
there's several different elements of that. We do have disaster recovery plan, which we believe we could be up and running in what I call minor disaster, something like the building burns down.
No, I was being facetious there. I'm sorry. I'm really talking about what's your plan if you can't get parts or supplies or power units from China. What's your plan for that? Not really. I was joking on the California.
That's true.
I'm sitting here in Coronado right now, looking at the ocean and hoping I don't have my house go in the water. So I understand that one. I was talking about business wise.
Yeah. So parts. First, we anticipate that the impact of the tariffs, if any, because they've been very minor on our business so far, we expect that the impact would be primarily financial, meaning the parts would cost more versus not be available. So we do buy mostly from U.S. distributors, so there's a fair amount of buffer stock in the supply chain.
Okay.
If things went on for a long time and got ugly, it's possible that buffer stock runs out. Although almost all of the parts that are made in China, in fact, I can't think of a single one that's made in China that isn't second. There isn't at least a second source, and in usually cases, many sources throughout the world. So I don't think we're really locked into any specific part from China. And even the parts from China, we believe, will be more expensive possibly, but I don't think they're shutting down factories.
But at least your competitors and everyone else will have to be dealing with the same factors, so at least you're in a level playing field.
Yes, there was an interest, except it's not always level in the sense that some of our customers and some of the players are outside the U.S. So it does change the international competitive complexity. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worst. We
sure.
had one customer from Canada, it turned out, said they were very worried about Canadian, U.S. duties on Canadian imports. And so they have contacted us about using part of our factory or shifting more business to us to manufacture so that they could have a U.S. source of supply for their U.S. customers. So
that's happening with a few smaller businesses that we're dealing with right now, a very similar thing, and also out of Canada. So that's a good point. Okay. Well, listen, I'm not going to take a lot more of your time. Let's go make some money and get the stock up and close this deal. And you got to prove to me with this deal, before you start adding these other deals, I hope if we're giving out stock and cash, and I don't like the 15-day average personally. I think you could have done a lot better than that, but especially with your stock being down as low as it's been recently, and especially when you're talking about Q3 and 4 to being the upside. And I think one of the problems you face as a company, as a very small semi-illiquid trading stock from my definition, maybe not yours, but what you do is that you don't have recurring revenue, and I think that you get penalized for missing quarters when I think that this company should be looked at on a 12-month run rate on an annualized basis. Now, it happens with certain smaller companies, and especially the way your product mix is. So I give you credit and I give you space because I think you need that. And then I'll look at this as an overall investment, where you're at in 12 months and what you've accomplished. And I think you get penalized for that. And I think if you had a do-over on the first couple of quarters, maybe with the guidance of either outside IR or banking or board members, they would maybe approach it differently. But you're where you're at, and you're going in a great place. So we hope Q3 and 4. I'll tell you what, if you don't have people telling you, step up the pump and answer my questions, it's not all rosy and dynamic and yada yada. It's real world, and I think that you are maturing as a smaller company into that space, and you've got an opportunity, but you don't get many if you don't get it done on an annualized basis. So I just want to confirm that. Still support you. I'm tough love. Just remember that.
Thank you, Rudy. As always, we really do appreciate all your thoughts and insights.
Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate the time, and I wish you the best, but you know what they say, you make your own luck. Preparation meets opportunity. So now here's the opportunity next two quarters, so go get it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice day.
At this time, this concludes our question and answer session. I would now like to turn the call back over to Mr. Cooper. Sir, please proceed.
Thank you, Carrie. And thank you, everyone, for joining today. We look forward to talking to you in the future and reporting on our progress. Meanwhile, please feel free to reach out to us at any time. Thanks, everyone. Operator?
Thank you. Now, before we conclude today's call, I would like to provide the company's safe harbor statement that includes important cautions regarding forward-looking statements made during today's call. One Stop Systems cautions you that statements made by management during today's call, which are not a description of historical facts, are forward-looking statements. These statements are based on the company's current beliefs and expectations. Such forward-looking statements include those regarding the company's 2018 financial outlook and expectations for 2018 revenue growth generated by new products, design wins, or M&A activity. The inclusion of such forward-looking statements and others should not be regarded as a representation by OSS that any of its plans will be achieved. Actual results may differ from those set forth on this call due to the risk and uncertainties inherent in our business, including without limitation, that the market of our products is developing and may not develop as we expect. Our operating results may fluctuate significantly, which would make our future operating results difficult to predict and could cause our operating results to fall below expectations or our guidance. Our products are subject to competition, including competition from the customers to whom we sell, and competitive pressures from new and existing companies may harm our business, sales growth rates, and market share. Our future success depends on our ability to develop and successfully introduce new and enhanced products that meet the needs of our customers. The likelihood of design proposals become design wins is uncertain, and revenue may never be realized. Our products fill specialized needs and functions within the technology industry, and such needs or functions may become unnecessary, or the characteristics of such needs and functions may shift in such a way as to cause our products to no longer fulfill such needs or functions. New entrants into our market may harm our competitive position. We rely on a limited number of suppliers to support our manufacturing and design process. If we cannot protect our proprietary design rights and intellectual property rights, our competitive position could be harmed, or we can incur significant expenses to enforce our rights. Our international sales and operations subject us to additional risks that can adversely affect our operating results and financial condition. If we fail to remedy material weaknesses in our internal controls over financial reporting, we may not be able to accurately report our financial results. And other risks described in our prior press releases and in our filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including under the heading Risk Factors in our annual report on Form 10-K and any subsequent filings with the SEC. You are cautioned not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements, which speak only as of the date hereof, and we undertake no obligation to revise or update this information to reflect events or circumstances after the date hereof. All forward-looking statements are qualified in their entirety by this cautionary statement, which is made under the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Before we end today's conference, I would like to remind everyone that this call will be available for replay starting later this evening through August 22nd. Please refer to today's press release for dial-in replay instructions available via the company's website at ir.onestopsystems.com. Thank you for joining us today. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.